Chapter 84, Taln 14. Taln looked down at what was now called the Teth Late toward the bay below. It was a short late, barely more than a few miles long, and its only real habitable area was here, near the ocean, where the valley expanded to form a natural, secluded bay. The new city lay almost in the same place as the city of Kanar once had. Looking down upon it, Taln was surprised to realize that he felt nothing.
"What did you expect?"
he thought, shaking his head. 2,000 years had passed since Kanar's fall, or, more accurately, since the Herald's destruction of the city. Nothing was left of the grand city that had once stood over the bay. After the city's defeat, its very stones had been changed to water by Marna Awakeners, Kanar's substance sent to mix with the ocean and be forgotten.
"So, this is where we stand," Kemnar said, scanning the valley. "Teth Kanar," Brother Lan agreed. "I've never been here before, if you can believe it. I asked for a transfer 10 set times over. There's a perfectly nice monastery in the city. No one ever listened to me, though."
"An oversight,"
Taln said, urging his horse down the slope. He had tried to give up his mount for the carrying of the wounded, but his men would not hear of it. They were the Herald's army, and their herald would ride, as was proper.
"From what I hear, the city would agree with you,"
Lan sighed.
"I know. It's a pity."
Kemnar paused for a moment atop the ridge, then he moved his horse forward, joining Taln and Lan on their way down.
"Where do you think the battle will take place?" he asked.
Taln studied the landscape as they moved, Dalinar's army piling over the ledge behind them. The valley was wide and squat for a late, with plenty of flat ground to fit an army or two.
"There,"
he said, pointing toward an open plain to the south of the city.
"If Dalinar puts us there, he will have the city to his back and the ocean to his left. It's a good, solid position. Ideal for a defending army."
"The river would cut off retreat to the northwest," Kemnar noted.
"I know,"
Taln said. He left the rest unstated. There would be no retreat from this battle. The Vaden armies had slaughtered the occupants of Rel Arum, and it was doing the same to any stragglers it passed. King Avan intended to leave no survivors to rise against him in the future. The Aleth army continued its march down into the valley. Their force was obviously expected. The army arrayed beside Teth Kanar's walls was small, perhaps 2,000 in number, but it had obviously been gathered recently, for it was arrayed in tents rather than housed in the city. A small party detached itself from the army below and began moving up the slope.
"Come on,"
Taln said to his companions, nudging his horse to the side so that he could join Dalinar and Yasna at the head of the line. Lord Intara turned out to be a short man, not overweight as Taln would have assumed from the stories. Instead, he had a blockishly rectangular face with chiseled features, a thin, wiry form, and a head of lightly curly hair that was more brown than it was black. Not unusual, considering his family's proximity to Prala. Intara hadn't shaved in several days, and his beard was coming in a light red. He smiled broadly as Dalinar and Ichathan reined in their horses, halting the column. Yasna's bearers turned her litter to the side, and she pushed back her drapes. Taln, Lan, and Kemnar rode up on one side, just as Meridas and Aniezer joined on the other.
"Ah, good," Lord Intara said. "It took you long enough to get here. You'll want to hurry and arrange your men so you can be ready for the feast tonight."
Dalinar frowned.
"We don't have time for your nonsense, Intara."
"Oh?" Intara asked lightly. "Well, you'd better find some time for my nonsense if you want into my city or to use my troops. I haven't had a proper feast in some time."
"The last I heard, Lord Intara," Yasna noted calmly from her litter, "you have a feast every evening."
Ah, the incalculable Lady Yasna, Intara said with a slight bow. Undoubtedly working on a half-ten-set schemes to whip me into line, eh? Well, I shall save you the trouble. You'll notice that I said I lack proper feasts. My nightly parties are always attended by the same dull people. It's rare that I have guests to entertain. So come play with me this evening, and I will command my men to play with you on the morrow. He turned his horse with a flip of his hand and began riding back down the valley slope.
Intara,
Dalinar called after the man. The short man paused, turning back with a questioning look.
To what do we feast? Dalinar asked.
Intara smiled. To our deaths, Lord Dalinar. Ours and that of our kingdom. It will be the finest funeral feast I have ever prepared. He turned again, leaving an annoyed group behind as he trotted lightly back to his city. It supposedly started after his wife died, Kemnar explained, climbing off his horse and handing it to a stable boy. Intara tried to drink himself to death. Unfortunately, he found himself surprisingly resilient to the effects of wanton partying.
Resilient?
Taln asked with a raised eyebrow. Around them, the soldiers were setting up camp once again, only this time there was a finality about their actions. If they won the battle, there was a good chance they would remain camped at Teth Kanar for a moderate amount of time, recovering from wounds and fatigue. If they lost, well, they wouldn't have to worry about disassembling the camp then, either. Lord Intara would feast all night and drink himself into a stupor, Kemnar said. But the next day he would supposedly suffer amazingly trivial effects from the punishment. He didn't glut himself to fatness, no matter how much he ate, nor did he waste away to nothingness, no matter how much he drank. Instead of dying slowly from his indulgences, he just grew healthier and healthier. It's been going on for 10 years now.
A feast every night, Lon agreed. Teth Kanar is a third city with a strong income, and Lord Intara keeps few shardbearers or other noble adjuncts to drain his funds. He spends nearly everything he earns on the feasts. A rather inspiring story in my estimation.
Taln snorted, then spun and punched at Lon. The monk jumped quickly in alarm, reflexively dodging and falling into a trained battle stance. Taln smiled, withdrawing his fist.
Eventually you're going to have to abandon that lazy facade, Lon, he noted. It's becoming less believable every day.
Lon raised an eyebrow, joining Taln and Kemnar in walking through the half-erected camp. If you don't think I'm useless, Taln, then you should see me thrust a spear sometime. Anyway, Kemnar explained, Intara hasn't changed much over the years. Yasna sent me to investigate his court a couple of years back. She was convinced that no one could possibly be as indulgent as Intara's reputation made him out to be, and suspected some kind of political maneuvering in the background of the feasts. I worked my way into his staff and watched him for several weeks. Every night was the same. A ridiculously lavish feast filled with the kind of revelers and sycophants that wanton spending attracts. Intara drank until he passed out at the high table sometime in the early morning. Then his servants, he has special men dedicated to the task, carried him to his chambers and put him into bed. He was always up early the next day and didn't display even minor hints of a hangover.
And this is the man we have fled to for refuge? Taln asked.
From what I understand, Kemnar said, we didn't have much choice.
Where did he get the troops?
Taln asked, nodding toward the group of soldiers camped beside the city.
If they are made up of men who frequent Intara's feasts, then I doubt they'll be of much use against Arvin.
I don't think he keeps a standing army, Kemnar said, studying the tents. Too expensive. He probably called them up from his tributing lords. But anyway, Lady Yasna asked me to report to her once I was settled. Taln nodded his farewell, and Kemnar dashed off toward the nobleman's section of the camp. Talnin Lan stood for a moment, uncertain. "What now?" Lan asked. "The feast doesn't start for another couple of hours."
"I'm not sure," Taln admitted. "I want to visit the men and give some final encouragement, but that should wait until they have their camp assembled."
Lan adopted a fond smile.
"It's almost like those days back in Rel Arum before the attack. The two of us standing around without anything to do. I suppose you could go preach to someone, though it wouldn't be half as amusing now as it was then. I doubt anyone would throw you out of camp, no matter what kind of loony things you told them."
Taln snorted, considering his options.
"I know what to do,"
he finally said, choosing a direction. He picked his way through the growing camp, past men erecting tents, organizing supplies, and unpacking armor for the upcoming battle. Most men paused when they saw him, and many bowed, including some who weren't from the Herald's army. It was amazing how quickly tales of him had spread through the various sub-camps, exaggerations piling on top of exaggerations as the word was passed. He tried to correct where he could, but, as always, the momentum of his reputation was far too vast a thing for one man to hinder. He led Lan to a group of decorated litters that lay near the outskirts of the camp. A group of soldiers worked quickly here, erecting a massive black pavilion. Their quiet, hasty movements made a strong contrast to the bustling interaction of the main camp. The soldiers finished tying down the last of the tent ropes even as Taln watched, then began scuttling away, eager to distance themselves from the pavilion and its occupants. The awakeners emerged from their litters a few moments later. Taln was disappointed when he noticed Lan drawing back slightly in fear. Not that the reaction was unexpected. The heralds had helped foster the current sentiment regarding awakeners, though they hadn't intended it to go so far. As long as the people were skeptical, it would be difficult for another awakener-dominated empire to arise. There were nearly 3 10 sets of them, the collected awakeners from Elokar, Dalinar, and Yasna's separate armies. Many were young to their art and manifested only the most trivial of physical changes— colored fingernails or eyes, tinted skin, or the occasional crystalline manifestation. A few, however, were in the more advanced stages. One man, probably a Shin Pole, had completely translucent skin. Another awakener was likely aligned toward Kav, for they were beginning to grow a rockbud-like shell, their fingers slowly growing together as their body changed from flesh into wood. Repeatedly touching the soul tone of a particular essence had an effect on one's own tone, lethargically changing the harmonic within.
"Friends," Taln said, bowing with respect, "I have come to thank you for your efforts on behalf of my men."
"What efforts?"
a younger female Baliv Pole asked.
"You give us gems to touch. The goods you receive are simply a byproduct."
Taln smiled.
"So you may claim," he said. "So you've been taught to say. But I know better. You are still men, awakeners. You can feel that you have been carelessly used, or you can feel that your skills are appreciated. Regardless of whether or not you enjoy the work, it cannot be easy to provide food and water for an army of 20,000.
"That much," the translucent agreed, "is true."
His voice was soft, like a passing breeze, and his eyes, translucent though they were, bore a deep wisdom. This one had not much time left. He was probably centuries old. Not old enough, unfortunately, to remember the last return. No awakener lasted that long. However, perhaps they had seen or noticed things that more short-lived men might have missed.
"I have a question for you, ancient ones," Taln said. "You have lived through many kings and wars. During the passing of decades, have you ever felt a weakness to your powers?"
Several of the awakeners trailed away as he spoke, moving into their tent and toward the gemstones undoubtedly placed within. Awakeners were not known for their patience regarding mortal concerns. That which didn't interest them often got ignored. The translucent-skinned man stayed, however, as did the younger Balif Pole, marked by her slick dark hair and glistening skin. The wood-skinned awakener, gender indistinguishable beneath the overlapping sections of bark, moved over and settled down within earshot but said nothing.
"I'm afraid I don't understand the question," the translucent said. "What do you mean by a weakening?"
"The old powers, the Apellian, disappeared centuries ago," Tom said. "I'm trying to discover what happened to them. I was once an awakener and a stone ward, and both abilities seem lost to me now. It appears that mankind can't use stone warding either, but they can awaken. I want to know if the second power is diminishing to them in any way."
"You were an awakener?"
the young woman asked, frowning skeptically.
"It is a matter of historical record that all of the heralds could awaken," Taln said. "It doesn't change our soul tones like it does yours. We have a certain resiliency to such things."
The woman raised an eyebrow, folding her arms and pursing her lips in disapproval. No, awakeners were hardly inhuman. Save for her skin, this young lady could have been a woman of the court. She was probably some nobleman's daughter.
"The old powers were mere legends when I was a boy, a young man," the translucent finally answered. "I don't know what you wish to discover from us. I have not grown weaker in awakening, but rather grown stronger as I practiced. The tones grow more tempting each time I touch them, and it is increasingly difficult to bring my own soul back into harmony at the end. No, there is no weakness here. Whatever ails you, it is an individual problem."
Tom nodded his thanks, and the remaining awakeners trailed away, except for the wood-skinned awakener, who remained squatting where they were, even as Tom left. It had been Tom's intention to skip the evening feast altogether. Yasna or Meridas could satisfy the fool in Tara. Tom's place was with his men. However, when he arrived at his pavilion, he found a messenger from the city waiting patiently by the tent door.
"My lord Intaro wished me to escort you personally to the feast, Lord Harold," the tall man explained, bowing. "He has reserved a place for you beside him at the lord's table. He is very eager to speak with you."
Tom frowned.
"Tell your lord that I am a soldier, not a courtier. I have no place at a feast. If Intara wishes to know about me, he can give my place to the monk, Lon, and speak with him."
Lon had gone to his own tent to make preparations. The monk wasn't about to miss out on a lavish meal, regardless of the circumstances.
"My lord was very insistent," the messenger said, not stepping away from Tom's doorway. "He implied that if you personally do not attend the feast, that he will consider it a violation of his agreement to let your armies camp here."
"Agreement?" Tom thought. "All I remember is an ultimatum." "Very well," Tom said with a sigh. "Lead the way."
The messenger paused.
"Don't you wish to change, my lord?"
Tom looked down. He wore the same rough riding clothing as always. His shoulders hung with the functional but drab cloak he had been given in the monastery all those months before.
"No, this will do," Tom said. "If Lord Intara wishes to force a soldier to attend his feast, then a soldier he will get."
The messenger sighed, then nodded for Tom to follow. The sky was only beginning to darken in the east. Apparently, Lord Intara liked to start his parties early. Taln shook his head critically as the messenger led him through the gates and into the city itself. Teth Kanar might have been built on the same rocks as the legendary city whose name it shared, but the two had little else in common. Kanar had been a majestic creation, a metropolis in a time when populations were scattered and often nomadic. Teth Kanar, however, was run down and poorly maintained. Cromstone grew unrestrained on most of the buildings, and there was a sense of abandonment to many of them. Teth Kanar was a large city, true, but it was a place of alleys and beggars. The poor clogged nearly every corner, hands outstretched, eyes hollow.
"This sort of thing isn't supposed to be able to happen," Taln thought with disgust as they approached the palace at the center of the city. "Bad rulers are not supposed to prosper. The right of movement allows his people to seek a better life elsewhere. As his population decreases, so should his rank. This man should not be a third lord."
There were flaws in every system, however, and Teth Kanar was obviously one of them. Taln was curious to know how Intara maintained such a large population while at the same time proving himself incompetent. Perhaps it was simply location. The Bay of Kanar was one of the finest ports in the area, and had historically been Alethkar's main thoroughfare for international trade. Apparently, even a wasteful fool could keep up his population while in possession of such a fine location. Taln walked up the palace steps, expecting to find lavish wastefulness inside. Selfish lords tended to enjoy the purchase of extravagant decorations and would spend money with ridiculous pomposity, even while their people starved. Taln was quite surprised, then, when the entry hallway proved to be rather inconspicuous. In fact, if anything, the palace chambers looked even more unkempt than the city streets. The few tapestries were faded and worn, and the carpets were frayed. Only about a third of the wall lamps were lit, and many were missing. As he turned down a side hallway, Taln reached out and brushed his fingers against the ridges of a column. They came back, tipped with dust.
"This isn't a man who cares only about himself," Taln realized. "It's a man who has stopped caring about anything."
Except feasts, apparently. Taln could already hear the sound of clanking dishes and murmured conversation from ahead. The hallway grew brighter until it burst into a massive dining room, lit by enormous hearths at each corner. There was a primitive, unrefined feel to the chamber. The haphazard arrangement of tables, mixed with ruddy hearth light and ununiformed servants, made for quite a contrast from the other contemporary feasts Taln had seen. Even Elokar's dueling competition had felt far more formal. Everyone there had been restrained, sitting in their appointed places or standing in prearranged viewing sections. Like most of what Taln had seen of Aleth culture, the competition had been designed to minimize chaos and maximize occasions for political fraternizing. Not so here. Intara's feast felt more like something Taln would have seen 2,000 years before, when visiting the uncivilized people in what would eventually become Remak. Large platters of food were distributed with very little variation between masculine and feminine dishes, and the room was stuffed with performers and minstrels. The messenger led Taln to a table near the front of the room where, as promised, Intara sat with an open seat beside him. Lord Dalinar sat near the other end of the table, watching the evening's proceedings with obvious disapproval. Yasna was correct. The new Aleth king was a good man. A little too conscious of formality for Taln's taste, but in this case they shared a sentiment. The feast was a waste of time.
"Ah, Lord Harald," Intara said, standing as Taln approached. "I am honored that you chose to attend."
Taln raised an eyebrow.
"I wasn't given a choice."
"Ah, perhaps," Intara said, gesturing toward Taln's seat. "But it isn't nice to point such things out.
Please, seat yourself.
Tom paused, then sighed, sitting.
Intara smiled broadly, returning to his own seat. I couldn't let you stay in camp, Lord Harold, the man explained. You see, I mostly threw this particular feast for your benefit, or at least to get you here.
And why is that? Taln asked.
Well, it isn't often that a man gets to meet a herald, the short man said.
He still hadn't shaved, and his clothing, upon closer examination, looked about as worn as some of the tapestries. I heard that you were accompanying the army here, of course. Even one such as I cannot ignore an army of 20,000 men marching upon his city. When I heard who you were, I realized what an opportunity I had. You see, I have been without a spiritual adviser for some time, as the local monks refused to attend my feasts anymore. I never imagined that I would have the opportunity to speak with an actual herald.
Taln sat quietly, trying to sort through the man's eager words. Intara actually seemed excited. There was no irony or mockery in his words.
Taln blinked in surprise.
You believe my claims that I am a herald?
Intara didn't even pause.
Well, of course, he said. I mean, it's been some time since we had a return. 980 years. I've been expecting that you would come sooner or later. I haven't studied much in recent years, ever since my problems began. But I used to be very fond of history. Tell me, where are the others? Your brethren and sister?
Taln sat, dumbfounded. Months of fighting against disbelief had conditioned him so that he wasn't certain how to respond to someone who was actually willing to believe.
But of all the people I've met this return, why did it have to be him? I don't know what happened to them,
Taln said, still a bit uncertain whether Intara was honest or not.
I located their shard blades, all buried at the holy city. They must have returned as I have, but it is very strange this time. Their blades should have disappeared when they died 1,000 years ago. I don't know, however, since I died before anyone else.
Ah, Intara said, that's right. The Battle of Velatal, only 3 months into the return. You were killed when the storm shade surrounded and overran the keep.
That's right, Taln said.
Odd how they singled that keep out for attack, Intara said. I always found the move to be strange. It wasn't really a strategic point in the battle, and moving to Velatal in such numbers cost them some serious losses elsewhere.
I can't believe I'm having this conversation, Taln thought.
The background noise of minstrels and balladesses faded. Jasna had come to care for him, and Kemnar obviously respected his ability to fight, but neither actually believed he was sane.
The storm shades are coming, then? Intara asked.
Taln nodded.
In a little over half a year, he said. And mankind isn't ready.
We never are, Intara said. But if that is the case, what are you doing here? Why fight for Alethkar? Don't you have better things you should be doing?
Taln glanced unconsciously toward Jasna. She was back in her element, the regal noblewoman, perfectly in control, flawlessly beautiful.
I have certain obligations, he said, turning back to Intara. Besides, I have had some trouble gaining momentum this return. Alethkar's leaders have promised to support my preparations if I lend them aid in this battle.
But, Intara said, frowning, the Aleth army is doomed. Even I can see that. The men are exhausted, a lot of them wounded, and Vaidenar has a far larger force.
I have fought for causes far more hopeless, Taln said. Like every time I support mankind against the Kothan. What comes will come. Is this why you wish to speak with me? To ask about the upcoming battle?
Intara blushed.
Well, no, he admitted. I have something of a more personal question, and I thought you might be able to answer. I was just wondering, why hasn't the Almighty killed me?
Tom paused.
Excuse me?
I've tried to be a poor leader, Intara said. Though it wasn't intentional at first, I really wasn't all that rational after my wife died. I thought the feasts would dull the pain, so I became a drunkard and an idler. Months had passed before I realized I really wasn't suffering much from my excesses. In fact, I felt healthier than I ever had. And that was wrong. You see, I wanted to suffer. I needed to suffer. But he wouldn't let me. So I decided to see how far I could go before he struck me down. I made the parties more and more lavish. I drank myself stupid every evening. I ignored the duties of my station. In fact, I started using the Way of Kings as a guidebook, taking all the things Bajadan taught and trying to do the reverse. Only it didn't work. My parties created a booming industry and attracted merchants from across Roshar. My feasts were piled with food far beyond what my attendees could eat, and so the extra was distributed to the needy the next morning. And as soon as word of that got out, fleets of the poor began coming to my city, increasing my numbers even further. Rather than destroying Tethkanar, I raised it up from a fourth city to a third.
Intara sat back, shaking his head.
And through it all, I couldn't make my body waste away. Alcohol barely seems to affect me anymore, and I always have energy, no matter how much I eat or starve. I can't seem to get fat, though I've tried, trust me. I've attracted every useless, idle fool of a nobleman in the nation, and not a single one has had the decency to have me assassinated so he can take my place.
The short man sighed, waving his hand toward the feasting people.
I mean, look at this. It's ridiculous. You are a herald of the Almighty. You have spoken with him. You know him. What does a man have to do before he gets a little divine judgment?
Talon frowned, studying the nobleman.
What happened? He asked quietly.
What happened when? With my parties? You can see for yourself I keep making them bigger, but it doesn't seem to make a difference.
No,
Talon corrected.
What happened to make you this way?
Intara paused.
My wife died,
he finally said.
Many men have lost those they love, Talon said. They don't react like this. What really happened?
Intara looked away. He didn't respond at first.
I don't see what that matters, he finally said.
It does, Talon replied.
Intara reached out, fiddling idly with a knife on the tabletop, spinning it around on one of the rivets that held the wood to the steel.
What happened? He asked. She loved me. That's what happened. She loved me too much, far more than I deserved. I never bothered with her, you see. Those were the days of the old king. Good, just Nolanaran, a man who demanded much of himself and twice that from his lords. I traveled everywhere, visiting his court, bringing his wisdom to my vassals. I was a young man then, eager to prove I wasn't just the quiet scholar everyone whispered me to be. And still she loved me. I saw her perhaps one day out of 10, and she did not hate me for it, but admired my dedication to my people.
He paused, looking at Talon.
I've often wondered something, Lord Harold. Is it possible for a man to so fill his life with important things that he doesn't have time enough left for the ones that are vital?
I don't know,
Taln answered honestly. Something about the man's words, however, left him feeling strangely guilty. Had he not spent his life, all 3,000 years of it, serving those things that were vital? Was not the survival of mankind vital? I ignored that which I should have loved most of all, Lord Harald, Intara said. I even took a mistress in Ralarum, not because I loved her, but because she excited me, and it made me feel politically powerful. I don't know if my wife knew about the mistress, but I think she did. Either way, she loved me despite it. She loved me right up until... He trailed off, looking away again. I wasn't there when it happened, he said, but my steward related her final words. Do you know what they were? Do you know what she had the gall to tell me? She said, tell my lord that I love him, and that I forgive him. He fell silent. And, well, that brings us here, Intara finally said, feigning nonchalance. The monks teach that when good men die, they go to the dwelling to be with those they love. Well, if that's so, then I have to make certain I don't go there. I couldn't face her, not knowing the kind of man I was. I won't have it, Lord Harald. Now, you tell me, what must I do to ensure that I am punished as I deserve? What further steps must I take? Must I stop giving food to the poor? I haven't been able to force myself to do that as of yet. Why make them suffer just so that I can die? But if you say it is necessary, I shall do it. The sooner I am gone, the sooner they shall have a finer man to be their lord anyway.
Taln folded his hands on the tabletop. Theology wasn't exactly his specialty. Better that Ishar had been here to speak with the poor, confused lord. Unfortunately, Ishar wasn't to be found. Neither were Balayar or Priel. Only Taln.
I don't think the Almighty works like you're assuming he does, Taln said as a tall, red-haired serving man refilled in Tara's goblet. If you were him, what would you do?
About a lord with my excesses? Intara asked, nodding his thanks to the serving man. I'd strike him down immediately. Make him die of some wasting sickness caused by too much drinking.
And what would that accomplish? Taln asked. I don't know, Intara. I've always been more of a soldier than a philosopher. But even I can see that the Almighty isn't likely to respond when men make selfish demands of him.
Asking him to kill me is selfish? Intara asked.
Of course it is, Taln said. Especially if he has something else he wants you to do. You complain that you ignored your wife, focusing only on yourself. Well, I don't see you doing much better now.
Intara sat thoughtfully. So what should I be doing instead?
Taln groped for answers.
Say something wise. This is the only lord you've met who actually believes in you. I don't know, Taln said. You seem like you have a great understanding of history. You said yourself that men thought you a scholar. What happened to that curiosity? A man with a firm knowledge of the past could be a great help in the dangerous times to come.
Intara cocked his head. Then he waved over a courier beside the wall and whispered a short message. The courier walked down the table and related the message to a younger man sitting near Lord Dalinar. Taln didn't recognize the man. He wasn't a member of their army. Probably one of Intara's regular feasters. The young man stood and walked the length of the table, pausing beside Intara, frowning in confusion.
Lord Harald, this is my nephew, Nettis, Intara said. He's a fine boy, my heir,
since I have no sons of my own. Nettis, the Lord Herald just told me to go to Thelena and become a stormkeeper. I leave this evening. You are now Lord of Tethkanar.
The boy started.
Now? He asked incredulously. You make me wait 5 years, then you give me the city the night before we're about to be destroyed by the Vaidens?
Oh, don't whine so, Intara said, standing. The Lord Herald says you might actually win, though if you duel, I'll have wasted a good funeral feast. Anyway, I guess I'll be going.
No?
Tallon asked.
Why not? Intara asked.
It might be bad for morale to have the lord of the city flee the night before battle,
Tallon pointed out. Intara paused.
Oh, he said. I didn't think about that. I'm not much of a warrior, if you didn't notice. Very well, then. Nettis, I'll abdicate tomorrow, after the battle. Go sit back down, and don't tell anyone of this.
The young man rolled his eyes. Apparently he was accustomed to dealing with Intara's ways. Tallon sighed as the lord sat back down.
Might as well eat,
he thought, turning, finally, to the lavish meal Intara had prepared. As he did so, he noticed a newcomer walk into the room. He had the clothing of a merchant, but he walked with the fluid step of a warrior. Of course, that wasn't rare for a man of his race.
Strange,
Tallon thought, heaping some glazed pork onto his plate.
I wonder what a Shin man is doing in town.